Okay, when Rabbi Singer asked me to speak last night after Myriv, I thought of a very nice an idea that came across, something that we came across recently in Daf Yomi, as well as something which has it's very applicable in a number of areas to this week's Parsha. And that is the idea of influencing others, either having a positive effect, or more specifically, giving rebuke, saying, you know, if somebody's doing something wrong, and telling them what they should be doing. We came across a Gemara just recently on Daf Nun Hey. Very, very interesting Gemara. The Gemara starts off where Rav Zeira says to Rav Simon, he says, Rav Simon, why don't you go ahead and rebuke the Reish Galusa, the house of the Reish Galusa? The Reish Galusa was the governing body of Bavel at the time, and they must have been doing something wrong. And often in periods of time in Bavel, there was competition between the Rashi Yeshivas, the Gaonim, and the Reish Galusa. But here, we don't know about the competitions, but they must have been doing something wrong, and Rav Zeira went to Rav Simon, who must have had some sort of influence, and he says to Rav Simon, Lochi chenu, go, why don't you give him Musar? Lochi chenu mar, lahani debay reish galusa. So Amalei, Rav Simon said back, lo makabli minoi. They don't listen to me. What am I going to do? Waste my time? They're not going to listen to me. Amalei, afagav de lo makabli, even though they won't listen, lo chichinu mar, you should rebuke them anyway. Diyama Rav Acha bar Chanina, because he quotes Rav Acha bar Chanina, me'olam lo yatsa midotova mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'chaz balara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never, ever gave out a good decree on Klal Yisrael. He never, ever once made a good decree and turned it to bad. Chutz midavazeh, except for one time. Dechsev, and it brings a few psukim in Yecheskel. Bayom Hashem says, go inside the city, inside Yerushalayim, and you should write vavs on the foreheads of the people that are ne'anachim and ne'anakim. So those are the tzaddikim and the rishoyim, and those that are like groaning and crying out, I'll call it to Evos about all of the abominations that are going on there. So Amalei, so that's the pasuk, and the Gemara explains what was going on. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeGavriel. Lech Rishom al Mitzchan Shal Tzadikim Tof Shal Dio. Go into Yerushalayim and all of the tzadikim that are there, go ahead and take and write a tof or imprint a tof on the forehead of these tzadikim. Why a tof? The Gemara later is going to say, maybe it's they did everything from Aleph to Taf, or the Chesem, the seal of Hashem, is MS, which ends in Saf. So he says, and why should you put the Taf on their forehead? Shlo yeshlitu behem malachi chavala. That there's going to be a destruction, and they'll get a pass. They'll have a Taf on their forehead, and nothing will happen to them. V'yal mitzcham shal rishayim, and on all those rishayim, wicked people, tuf shal dam, put a tuf of blood, k'dei sheyishlatu ben malachi chavala, so that the malachi chavala should attack them and take over them. So that's what it is, and he told Gavriel, go do it. All of a sudden, amra midas adin lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So midas adin said, wait a minute, one second, I protest, I'd like to say something. Rabbeinu shalaylam, Manish tanu elu me'elu. What's the difference between these and these? So the Mefarshim explain what you mean. What the difference is? It's tzaddikim, they're rishayim. So amalei, amalah. So Hashem said, what are you talking about? Halalu tzaddikim gemurim, v'halalu rishayim gemurim. They're tzaddikim gemurim, and they're rishayim gemurim. They're great tzaddikim, they're great rishayim. They get saved, and they'll get punished. So amra. The Amr Lefanav, the Midas Adin said, Rebbeinu Shalaylam, Haya biyadam limchos, v'lo machu. They had the ability to go ahead and protest, and they did not protest. Amalah, Amalah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Midas Adin, Galoy v'yadua lefanai. It is revealed in front of me. This is Hashem talking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking. He says, I'm telling you, I know that she'imichu b'hem lo yikablu mehem. The Rishon would not accept their tochacha. It would have been nothing. It would have been worthless. They wouldn't have changed. Amra, so Midas HaDin said back, Amra Lefanov, Midas HaDin said back to Hashem, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Im Lefanecha Galoi, you may have known it. Lahem mi Galoi, who told the Tzadikim? And the Gemara continues. It brings Psukim that in fact during the Chorban, this good decree was rescinded, and in the Chorban there was a Kenim and Bachurim and Besula and Tafanashim to argue. They were killed. So you see from this Gemara like a very, very powerful idea, powerful thought, and that is if somebody has the ability to be mochiach, to go ahead and to rebuke somebody, and they don't, so there's a punishment. And even a good decree, never something unheard of, something that never happened at all, for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just doesn't rescind good decrees. Nevertheless, they were punished. It was taken back. I think I could. I don't think it's too much of an extension, but I'd like to say that what is a rebuke? I think that having a positive influence on somebody is the same thing as a rebuke. Rebuke. What's the purpose of a rebuke? Is to make somebody do better. And if you have the ability to go ahead and influence somebody to be positive, it's the same idea. That's the goal. The goal of a rebuke is to turn somebody around, to make somebody do better. And I found a very fascinating Sifsei Chachamim. And it's Sifsei Chachamim is this in this week's Parsha. It says that, Yaakov left Lavan and he's on his way back to Esav, and he knows he's in trouble, and he sends messengers to Esav. He tries to appease him with gifts. And he knows what's coming, and he has one night, and he gets into a fight with a malach. And it says, Vayakom Balayla, who? I don't want to talk about any of that, but the pasuk here, this is Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chav Gimel, and it says, Vayakom Balayla, who? He got up in that night. Vayikach Eshtei Nashav, Vayeshtei Shevchosav, he took his two wives, his two maidservants, Vayeshachad Asa Yoladav, and he took his 11 children. Yavar is Mavar Yabok, and he was like a ferry, and he brought him over the river of Yabok. And the question is, Rashi asked the question, 11 children, Yaakov had 12. Somebody's not accounted for. And Rashi brings down, it says, Vedina, Hechan, Haisa, where was Dina? So Rashi answers his own question. Nitna b'teva v'nol b'faneha. He put her in a box and closed her up. Why? Shlo yitein ba Esav b'einav. Esav shouldn't put his eyes on her. And Rashi ends off saying, ulakach nenash Yaakov. And as a result of that, Yaakov was punished. Shemana me'echav. Since he prevented from his brother, shema tachziruhu lamutav. Because maybe Dina would have influenced Esav, and maybe she would have brought him around, had a positive influence. Therefore, v'nafla biyat Shechem. Therefore, she fell in the hands of Shechem. So the Sifsei Chachamim here asks a very interesting question. The question he asks is, he says, wait a minute. He says, v'kasha d'mayshina meleya. What's the difference between Dina and Leah? Because what do we know about Leah? Leah, it says her eyes were weak, right? She had weak eyes. Why did she have weak eyes? Because she was crying for years and years. Why was she crying? Because Chazal tell us that people said, oh, Lavan has two daughters and Rivka has two sons, And we got two shidduchim going. We got the oldest son will marry the oldest daughter, and the youngest son will marry the youngest daughter, which means Leah will end up with Esav. And what did she do? She cried. And she cried, and to her point is where she, now Rakos. And yet we never see that it was a clay, it was a taina, it was something against Leah. Leah is never faulted for crying, for not wanting to marry Esav. If anything, I don't recall where, but I think I may have seen that may have been a schus for her to marry Yaakov. She was so concerned about her own personal ruchnius and didn't want to fall to such a rasha. So that could have been a schus that all events happened that she ended up with Yaakov. But we never find any fault with Leah. And that's the kasha that the Sifsei Chachamim asks. So the Sifsei Chachamim gives two answers. The second answer is, I'll say the second answer first because the second answer he brings is not the one I want to focus on. But the second answer he brings is, he says, you know, people have different tchunos, they have different abilities, different talents. And Leah was, Leah was not necessarily into Kirev. She was into chinuch. She was, she wouldn't do well in the world of Bali Tshuva, as opposed to Dina. Dina was different. Dina was a type of a personality that she would be able to turn Esav around. Leah did not have that ability, and Dina did. And therefore, of course, Leah is not faulted. She knew herself, and she knew what she was able to do, and she knew she would not be able to. She wouldn't do well with Esav, as opposed to Dina. He says at the end here, which I never knew this before, but it says that maybe there must be Chazal. He says, "Abel Dina shenisseis le'iv vechzir lamuta v'gai raisei." Seems that he brings down that eventually, maybe at some point, Dina married Eiv and turned Eiv around. Must be some matter somewhere. But that's the answer I don't want to focus on. The answer that I would like to is his first answer. So the Sifsei Chachamim says like this. He says, Yesh Loma, the shiny Leah is different. Why? Because Lefisha also Zman Hayarasha Gomer. At the time when Leah was growing up, and they were probably making some shaduchim for with Leah and Esav was a Rasha Gomer. The Lakach Nasham al Nashav and Nasa Averis Chamuros. He was really off the derech. He was unreachable. He was really bad. V'yef Shalach Zira L'mutav. It was a time. It was Esav was not reachable. Lefikach maskeres l'shavach. Therefore, it was mentioned as a praise for Leah. She didn't want to get involved with such a rasha. She didn't want to have anything to do with him. Abel achshav. But now shenimkru racham aval Yaakov. That when Yaakov, when Esav came, and Esav was first meeting Yaakov. And Yaakov, in the distance, he bowed down seven times, and it says, he softened Esav up, and v'nashku b'chalibo, and it says v'yashkehu, and there are dots on the v'yashkehu, and he kissed him, and some opinions say that it wasn't a kiss with a full heart, but others say that Esav kissed him with a full heart, so now you're talking about a different Esav. This is a different Esav. So now Esav was a different Esav, and now it's possible that Dina could have had a positive a positive influence on Esav, and that's what Yaakov was faulted for. So I think I'd like to say on this Sifsei Chachamim, I could say like about four things. First of all, you can see that sometimes there are people that are just unreachable. That's it. There's nothing you can do or you can say that could reach that person, make a difference in that person's life. That's it. They're gone. That's it. Nothing you can do. However, second thing is that something can happen in the life of that person. An event can happen. Something life-shattering, something not. But something can happen that could soften that person up. And when when that person is softened up and is reachable, number three is there is a responsibility to get that person at that time. You see that Yaakov is faulted. He knew starting right away when he put according to what we're saying, when he put Dina in the box, it was the right thing to do. And he knew that Esav is going to take a look at her and maybe want to marry her, and she's not for him, he's unreachable. But once he sees Esav is softened up and he goes ahead and he gives him a kiss and they're talking like brothers and everything is fine, then Yaakov should have changed. Now he has to realize, hey, I'm not talking about the old Esav, this is a new Esav, and I have a responsibility now to go ahead and maybe take Esav, take Dina out of the box. Maybe if Esav wanted to marry Dina, maybe that could be a life changer. You know, even though that event happened, it doesn't mean that the person, boom, will become a full Baal Tshuva. Just means that Esav is reachable. And at that point, we have to be mindful of certain people that were at one point unreachable, and now you have to see maybe you can make a change now. And the last thing you see here is that if you don't take that opportunity, Yaakov, who did not take that opportunity, what happened? He was punished. It's not like just a nice thing to do, but it was a punishment. It was Dina was taken. Dina was taken away from him by Shechem because of that punishment. We also see the same idea in the Gemara in Daf back where we are. It says that when there were certain people, if a person doesn't rebuke, so they're blamed as if they caused. The Mishnah brings down Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, his ox went out carrying something against the wishes of the Chachamim. So the Gemara asks, his ox? Do you know who Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was? You know how rich he was? His miser for every year was 12,000 oxes. So which ox are you talking about? That means he must have had 120,000 oxes. So what do you mean, his ox? That's so the Gemara answers is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had a neighbor. It seems like a female neighbor, whatever. She had a neighbor, and that neighbor's ox walked out with some type of strap between the horns or something that the Chachamim would view as carrying. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is blamed as if you were ox carried because you didn't tell your neighbor not to do it. Also brings, I'll just bring one more at the very end. It says that Shlomo HaMelech, on the one hand, he says he was a tremendous tzaddik. It says, you know, he was not like David his father. But okay, he wasn't like David his father. David HaMelech was like all the way up there, and Shlomo was not exactly all the way up there. But he didn't sin. He wasn't an aver. And yet it says that towards the end of his life, Shlomo HaMelech did Avodah Zarah. So what's going on? If you do Avodah Zarah, you're not, okay, just a little less than your father David, you're a Rasha. So the answer is because since his wives were worshipping idols or doing things towards in that direction, and Shlomo had the ability again to rebuke them, to have an influence on them, and he didn't. So he was called as if he worshipped idols. In this week's Parsha, you see the same idea as well, where after Shechem took Dina, so now Shechem wanted to go ahead and he says he wanted to marry Dina. So the brothers, they made a whole thing. Look, we can't marry you because you're not circumcised. So they made a whole thing about circumcised, and Shechem went to the whole town and he said, listen, let's all get circumcised and then we can marry with these people. And they agreed. And then 3 days after the circumcision, Shimon and Levi go ahead and wipe out all the men of the town. So they asked the questions, says, look, Shechem was Chayiv Misa, kidnapping, you know, and raping, kidnapping. So he was Mechayiv Misa, but what did the town do? And the town, they should have set up courts. One of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach is to set up courts, and they should have taken care of Shechem. And because they didn't do that, they themselves were Mechayiv Misa as well. So I guess not rebuking or not having that positive influence that you could have had is either you're called in that bad name, or you are, the punishments are not so, they could be very severe. Now, but yet I want to now go on the other. What happens when a person does rebuke or does have a positive influence on somebody else? So it says in this week's parsha, again, that Reuven did something that he should not have done. Because of that, he lost the bechora. And what was it that he did? What was it that Reuven did? He went ahead and he moved the bed of his father. Rachel had died, and Yaakov took his bed and he moved it into Bilhah's tent. And there are different reasons why he moved it there. Some say that Yaakov only moved, he was able to somehow see the Shekhinah. And wherever the Shekhinah went, that's where he set his tent. And the Shekhinah put themselves in Bilhah's, and that's one answer. Another answer is he figured, look, Leah may not have wanted me because I haven't been with her all that time. So he went, but whatever reason is, he went into Bilhah's tent, and Reuven felt the pain for his mother. And he really felt her anguish and he said, look, I understand when Rachel was alive, so Rachel and Leah were sisters, and really Yaakov wanted Rachel, and she was the really Keres HaBayis, and he really worked for her for 14 years, and that's what he wanted. So I understand why Yaakov, his father, would want to put his main place in the tent of Rachel. But now Rachel's not there, and you're going to give up, you're not going to put the tent of Leah, who's the full wife, and you're going to put it into the tent of Bilhah, and that was too much. And the Gemara actually over here also brings down, there's a machlokas in the Gemara, what did Reuven do? Did he just move the bed out, or did he live with Bilhah? According to, they explain maybe if she was a shivcha, she was never freed, then there was no kedushin. But putting all that aside, Reuven in fact did an Avera. And after that Avera, he went ahead and he was doing tshuva. And he did tshuva on that Avera. However, I want to just point out, it says in Zosa Bracha, very, very interesting Rashi. When you read the brachos in Zosa Bracha, so the psukim, this is the brachas that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving at the end of the lives, and he brings down. He says, "Yechi Reuven ve'al yamos." Reuven should live, and he should not die. And it's referencing to his avera of moving Yaakov's bed. V'himas of mispar, and then the next pasuk goes, "V'zos li Yehuda." This is Yehuda va'yomar. And he says, Shema Hashem kol Yehuda, Hashem should listen to the voice of Yehuda, Yelamot Tevienu, and his nations, he should save them and bring them, and he should be a help for them. So Rashi asks a question. He says, it goes from Reuven, and the next pasuk is Yehuda, right? It says Reuven to Yehuda, but why should you go from Reuven to Yehuda? There's Levi in between, and even though Shimon wasn't directly mentioned, but you should have put Levi there. What's the connection between Reuven and then Yehuda? So Rashi brings down, fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, he brings one pshat, and then it says, V'od perishu rabosenu, shakol arba im shana, shahoyu yisrael bamidbar. For the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, Hayu Atzmos Yehuda misgalgal in Biaron. Must have been the spookiest thing, because they're carrying all the Aron of Savuol, the Shvatim, and the Aron of Yehuda was banging away inside. His bones were shaking. Why was his bones shaking? Ibnei Nidoi, because of the excommunication Shekibul Alav, that he accepted upon himself. What happened with the Maisa with Yosef, the brothers went down, and Yosef said, I'm not giving you back Shimon unless you bring down Binyamin. And Yaakov didn't want to send Binyamin, that's all he had left. He didn't have Rachel anymore, he didn't have Yosef. And Yehuda made a guarantee to Yaakov. He says, I am giving up this world and the next world if I don't bring Binyamin back to you. And because of that, he was excommunicated. So what happened? So one pshat is that In fact, he didn't bring Binyamin back, because since the Rachel side of the family didn't do good with traveling, you know, Rachel died on the road, and Yosef was killed on the road, so they decided to leave Binyamin in Mitzrayim, because they knew that Yaakov's coming down to Mitzrayim anyway, so they left Binyamin there. So according to that pshat, then in fact Yehuda did not follow the bargain. He didn't bring Binyamin back, and he was in excommunication. He didn't make his way into Olam Haba. The other pshat is he did bring him back, but since he made a condition that was not biyado, because if Yosef wanted, is another pshat I heard, that he did bring Binyamin back, but it was the promise that he made was not biyado, wasn't in his hands. In other words, if Yosef would have wanted Binyamin and not given him back, if that viceroy would have wanted him, Yehuda would not have been able to fulfill this guarantee to his father. But in any case, Yehuda's bones were shaking in the Aron, and they were shaking because he was in excommunication in Shemayim. So what happened? So this is 40 years, this is it. This is the last week of Moshe. This is 40 years in the desert. So what happened? Hayu atzos in magaglam ibnei nidoi shenema v'chatasi li'avi kaliyamim. Amar Moshe. Listen, what did Moshe say? Now, Moshe is going to try to find some schus for Yehuda to get Yehuda into Shemayim. What do you think his schus could be? Huh? What did Yehuda do? Huh? Did a lot of good things, right? Yehuda was Torah. He went down to Mitzrayim and set the yeshiva up. He was the head of the brothers. I'm sure he did a lot of good things. But what was Moshe claiming? And this is the taina that Moshe gave, and it won. When he gave this taina, Yehuda went in. The excommunication was over. What was the taina? What was it that, what schus did Yehuda have? Listen to this. This is, if you don't know the Rashi, it's wild. He said like this: Mi garem l'Ruvain sheyoda. Who was the one that caused Ruvain to do tshuva, to admit on his mistake? It was Yehuda. It's a Gemara in Sota. Who was the one? It was Yehuda. And with that schus that Yehuda got Ruvain to do tshuva, with that schus, Yehuda should go into Gan Eden. And it won, and that's it. He got him into Gan Eden. The Gemara there says he still didn't understand the yeshiva, what was going on. He wasn't able to get into yeshiva, and then Moshe prayed more, and so on and so forth, until finally he got Yehuda all the way into the yeshiva Shalmaila. And but what was it? Of all the schusim, what was the number one schus? What did it for Yehuda? You know what did it for Yehuda? Because he had a positive influence on Reuven. It wasn't all his Torah and all his mitzvahs that he himself did. What was it? It was the act that he positively influenced Reuven to go ahead and do tshuva. Because of that, that's what got him in. So you see, in effect, what that could do if somebody has, you know, the influence, the schus of helping others or influencing others positively. That's it. That seems to be the most powerful thing that Moshe put forth to help Yehuda get up into Shemayim. Along the same lines, in terms of a positive, to what extent, if somebody has positively influenced you or helped you, to what extent do you owe that other person? If somebody, let's say, somebody had an influence on you, let's say a Rebbe, a teacher, a friend, well, what do you owe that other person? So I just would, again, turn back to, actually, this is next week's Parsha in Vayeshev. And this is something I saw in Sichos Musar for Reb Chaim Shmuel Lovitz. He has a very nice piece there on Akaras HaTov. And he brings down that the Yosef went to the brothers, and the brother says, here comes the dreamer, and that's it. They convened a Beis Din, and they decided to kill Yosef. And they said, what's going to be? We'll let's kill him, we'll throw him into the pits, and we'll say a wild animal killed him, and we'll see what will be with his dreams. Vayishma Ruvain. And Reuven heard, v'yatzileinu miyadam, and he saved Yosef from their hands. Now, what did Reuven hear? So, Rav Chaim Shmuel Lovitz, I don't know if he's quoting a medrash, but you know what Reuven heard? Reuven heard, it just says he remembered the dreams of Yosef. You see, Reuven, when he did his Avera, and he was doing tshuva, he had a very, very strong doubt. And he was in doubt if he was still part of Klal Yisrael. He thought that maybe he lost it. Just like Yishmael was thrown out of Klal Yisrael, and just like Esav was thrown out of Klal Yisrael, he thought that maybe he blew it, that's it. He's thrown out of Klal Yisrael, he's not there. But then, Vayishma Reuven, he understood something, he heard something, and that put him tremendously at ease. And what was that? It was Yosef's dreams. What was Yosef's dreams? Yosef had a dream, his first dream, that was that sheaves bow down to his sheave, and stars bow down to his stars. How many sheaves and how many stars bow down to Yosef's sheave and Yosef's star? How many? 11. That means that Reuven understood that he was still part of Klal Yisrael. So here it was, he had a tremendous Hakaras HaTov. He was influenced in a positive way that he felt good. Oh, Baruch Hashem, Yosef put me at ease. He made me feel better that I'm part of Klal Yisrael. And when that happened, he decided to stand up to his brothers. And he, you know, the brothers were strongly felt that Yosef should be killed. And Reuven al Sakaras HaTov decided to go ahead and stand up to his brothers. Even to the point where, if you were to ask Yosef, do you know that when you said the dreams over, did you say the dreams over so Reuven should feel better? Yosef would say, "What? What are you talking about?" He probably may not have even known what was going through Reuven's mind. And Yosef did not have maybe not even any intention to go ahead and to help somebody else. But nevertheless, since Reuven, even though Yosef didn't have that intention, Reuven felt better, he gained from Yosef, he was willing to do whatever he could to save Yosef's life. There's two stories that I would like to just tell you in terms of a story of influencing. One story is a story that I read in The Heavenly City. I don't know if anybody knows. The Heavenly City was about Yerushalayim. Shalmaila was originally in Hebrew. Heavenly City is the story about Yerushalayim in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. And it's just written very nicely about, you know, the Gedolim that were there. And this story was about the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin. And actually the story starts with, Rav Yeshaya Orenstein, who was a big Askin, a big Gadol in his own right, and he was one of the Talmidim of the Brisker Rav. And he was walking outside, and he noticed on the floor, a ksuba that was ripped up. And he was in a panic, you know, because it's a ksuba, it's a real ksuba, and a man and a woman is not allowed to live without a ksuba. So he went to one of his rebbeim, and before he said anything, the person said to Rabbi Yeshaya, he says, "You should have been at the wedding last night." And you know, before he mentioned that he had the ripped up ksuba, so I forgot who it was, but he says, "Oh, you should have been at the wedding last night." And the wedding was, as Rabbi Yeshua believed, Diskin was the Masada Kedushin, and the chassan and the kala were under the chuppah, and the ksuba was being read, and all of a sudden at the bottom of the ksuba it said, it was written on the bottom, it said, "Luntz Press." Now, Luntz was a very big maskil. He was for secular education. He was undermining the entire community. And he went ahead and he ripped up the ksuba, and he had everybody wait for another ksuba to be written. And this, I guess, was very meaningful to Rav Orenstein, because he actually kept the pieces, I guess, to bring out that point. Look at to what extent, you know, the Reb Shulei Diskin is what he feels is so important. He found himself, Rav Orenstein found himself about 2 years after the Briskerov died. He found himself going through Europe, trying to collect money for the Yishuv, trying to collect money for Eretz Yisrael, and he found himself in Pinsk. And in Pinsk, there was a Rav there, and he got talking to the Rav, and he told him about this incident about the Ksuba. And he actually took out the pieces, and he showed him the pieces of the Ksuba. And the Rav says, hold on a second. And he went ahead and he called two different people. And he said to Rabbi Orenstein, repeat the story. And they repeated the story with the pieces of the Ksuba. And he found out afterwards that these two people were both very supportive of the secular school, gymnasia, whatever it was in that time. And when Rabbi Yeshaya told him this story, so they actually drew their support from the school, and they actually opened up a Talmud Torah, a real yeshiva in Pinsk. Just the influence, just the you know, so he said at the end, the Brisker Rav rips up a Ksuba in Eretz Yisrael and it makes a Talmud Torah in Pinsk. Just another story about it, just an influence, and that is, this took place in the 1940s in the Bronx. There was a boy who came from a secular home, very, very tenuously from, and his mother passed away. And he was in public school, and he was acting up in public school, and they threw him out of public school also. So he was a kid on the street in the 1940s. His name was Leonard Kaplan. And when his mother passed away, so somebody said to him, you know, you should say Kaddish for your mother. So he went to say Kaddish in a certain minyan, and somebody there said, no, you go to a shul. And he went to a shul to say Kaddish. This kid from a non-religious home. And there was a family there, a Rosenberg family, that saw this kid saying Kaddish for his... He wouldn't daven at all, but when it came to Kaddish, he said Kaddish. So this boy, this from boy, Rosenberg, could have done a few things. He could have ignored him, he could have made fun of him, he had the yarmulke that came from the pocket. And basically he said to, he befriended him. He says, what's your story, what's going on? And he actually took it upon himself, and he had a brother or two, and they taught him Aleph Beis. And one of the reasons he was acting up in school is this: he was a genius. He had a genius IQ. He picked up Aleph Beis like that. Before you know it, they were teaching him Chumash. Within a very short time, they were teaching him Gemara. They invited him over to their house. He was a Ben Bais there for Shabbos. And at some point he got very sick, and when he got better, he decided that he was going to go to yeshiva. And this Leonard Kaplan, we happen to all know as Reb Aryeh Kaplan. And this is a positive influence, something that we could all do. You don't know who people are, but this is a family, this is a Rosenberg family. You know, if nobody knows who Reb Aryeh Kaplan is, Reb Aryeh Kaplan, unfortunately he died very young, but in the span of 11 years, he wrote over 50 Sfarim. He took the entire Me'am Lois, translated it from Ladino to English. He wrote Svarim about Kirov that they're still using today. It's been translated in over 10 different languages. He was a genius, and his influences, his Svarim, his books are around now. In such a short year, 11 years, 50 Svarim. That's who this was. And what was it all about? A boy went over to another boy and said, what's the story? What's with you? How'd you like to learn? Come for Shabbos. And the positive influence like that, the Peiros are truly amazing. All right, have a nice day. Thank you.